This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
I am just so excited to report that we broke all of our yearly fundraising records. We raised over nearly $123 million in 2020. Our community just killed it last year. They totally stepped in and stepped up and supported all of these organizations that were really in need. We just want to say a huge thank you to our seller community because they just really made an impact on a lot of organizations who were really needing that type of support.
If you don't have that direct relationship and you do catch somebody on a bad day and you go in there and they say what you just said, which is we're not going to scan all of these, that's the point where you can request a supervisor, and maybe they do have a clerk working behind the window that does have the time and can be pulled to go ahead and scan all the packages. But you're in the right to request each and every package to be scanned.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 125. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Griff. Good to hear your voice again. Missed you last week, as stellar Rebecca did a great job.
Oh, she's always good, but you are too.
Well, thank you.
My job as host is to make sure our co-hosts have as inflated egos as possible.
Well, keep pumping mine up. I'll take it.
My pleasure. Anyway, what a week it's been.
It has been a crazy week, hasn't it?
Yeah, people have been glued to their TV sets for the last couple of weeks, and then it's kind of calmed down now. Everyone is, because we're recording this, obviously, a few days after the inauguration. It seems like people are going back to their business. Kind of interesting to watch everything come back to some sort of normal, at least in that respect. Not when we're talking about the pandemic. Things are not normal at all.
No, but a big, big week this week, definitely, with an inauguration of a new president and new administration. And so we'll hope the best for the new administration.
Exactly. In the meantime, we do focus on some news, and that news has to do with eBay. And Brian, I wonder if you have any news for us this week.
We have some news.
Okay.
So this week, it's slightly old news in that we talked about this last week, but the seller news announcement about the new listing experience is now up at www.ebay.com/seller news.
Great.
It says, starting today, some sellers can try out our new redesigned listing experience, which brings more consistency to how you list across devices. It continues, over the next few weeks, we'll expand this option to all sellers. When you're eligible, you'll see, try the new listing tool where you create new listings.
Yeah. And of course, I just checked. As usual, I'm not in the cool first group of sellers that gets access to this new listing experience. I feel like I'm always behind the velvet rope, watching everyone else get led into the club. What about you?
Same with me. I think what we need to do is we need to go talk to Harry and say, hey, when you do this stuff, can you just include us and we'll give it a go?
Right. We need to pass the bouncer at the door a note saying, hey, we're with Harry. Let us into the new experience.
I did hear Harry talk about this today. He was talking to some sellers today and he said about 10% of sellers have access to it now. And there's an ability to flip back if they don't like it. But really what they're looking for is for those sellers that do have it. And I'll say what Harry said to these other sellers. If you've got it, please use it, test it, and give feedback to the team.
Yeah, and I saw a link that I think eBetsy posted on a Facebook post where they were already talking about it on the community threads.
Oh, great. eBetsy's wonderful. She's always on top of stuff.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I just don't care what it looks like. I want new experiences now. I don't want to wait. Even if it needs more work, I just want it now.
You don't want to go through the process of getting it really good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I suppose. I just want it now. I feel like I don't have much time left, so I want these new experiences while I'm still breathing.
Pronto. So what's on the menu this week, Chris?
I'm glad you asked, because this week is part of our Reflect and Review month. In fact, this is the last week of the month of Reflect and Review. We're going to reflect on some of the shipping challenges that all of us experienced this past holiday season. And we'll review some advice from a shipping expert who knows from the inside so we can be better prepared next time.
And we'll also have a segment on cost meta.
No, we're not going to do that this week.
No cost meta? Okay. Wait, I thought we were going to have a segment on mitigating the cost of returns.
Yeah, that's for next week.
But you said it would be this week.
I know, but I'm still working on it. I want to make sure that all my T's are dotted and my I's are crossed before I release it.
Okay, you go do that. Although I think you might want to restate that. In the meantime, meantime, I'll be back to assist you with You Got Questions segment. That is, if we have any.
Oh, we do, Brian. In fact, we have a trio of questions. But first, how charitable giving and eBay selling can go hand in hand. Although the official season of giving has passed, the true spirit of giving here at eBay is a year-round affair. Since 2003, many of our sellers have been giving to charity by donating a percentage of their sale proceeds to a favorite charity of their choice. Today, eBay for Charity has helped raise over $1.1 billion for charitable institutions here in the USA. It's been a while since we've checked in with them, so I thought maybe we should. Welcome back to the podcast from the eBay for Charity team, Senior Manager of Operations, Joe Rodriguez. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks, Griff. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you back. There's been some changes on eBay's operations when it comes to payments that we need to talk about, and I hope we can ask you some questions about that, specifically about managed payments.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the last time we spoke, we had talked about managed payments coming for eBay for Charity, but we hadn't quite rolled it out. And we have definitely rolled out the product, and we're working with charities, our charity sellers, to onboard them into managed payments to be managed payment sellers. And the product is actually now integrated into eBay for Charity. So if I'm a seller on the platform that wants to support charity, but I've onboarded to managed payments, I now can donate anywhere from 10 to 100% of my sale to benefit a charity and still be within the managed payments.
So let's talk about that in a little bit. I wanted to get an update first. What's happened specifically in 2020, which was a really unusual year all around when it comes to funds raised by the eBay community for eBay for Charity?
2020 was definitely a difficult year for a lot of our charity partners. To be honest, we were really worried going into the year. How are we going to support our charity partners? And would our sellers feel comfortable continuing to make a donation in their sales, understanding that it still is a difficult time? But 2020 really threw everybody for a loop. But honestly, I am so amazed and astonished by our community. Our sellers and our charity partners really stepped up, and they did such an amazing job just focusing their support on all sorts of different organizations last year. A lot of organizations that were doing work to support communities really impacted by COVID, Feeding America or local food banks or direct relief and trying to get PPE to our healthcare workers, and also supporting organizations that were out there helping our small businesses. So Opportunity Fund. And then there was a lot of support around social justice organizations through the summer, a lot of support going to organizations that were really trying to educate people on voting and getting out the vote and participating in our November elections. I am just so excited to report that we broke all of our yearly fundraising records. We raised nearly $123 million in 2020. That is a huge growth over even what we did in 2019. In 2019, we raised $112 million, which was amazing. But our community just killed it last year. They totally stepped in and stepped up and supported all of these organizations that were really in need. We just want to say a huge thank you to our seller community, because they just really made an impact on a lot of organizations who were really needing that type of support. $1.1 billion globally going to benefit charities all throughout the world, with our UK partners in Canada and Germany and Italy, Spain, France, Australia. Our community really stepped up in all these different regions to support various causes.
We should make this clear to people who are just U.S. sellers that, like you just said, eBay for Charity is no longer just a U.S. concern right now. It's actually been rolled out across many countries.
We're working to do more. We have some form of a charity presence in 7 countries. We're going to be doing more this year to roll out managed payments within those regions, but also bringing on different components of the eBay for Charity program where they may not have necessarily had it before in that region, and really just providing more of a service and the ability for charities to list inventory. There is a presence there, but we're looking to do a lot more.
What are some of the benefits beyond just that feeling good supporting a charity that comes for a business who's actively giving to charity through eBay for Charity?
a big benefit on the eBay side is that we offer special fee rates or fee credits for sellers who want to support charity. So if you're donating 10% of your sale to a charity, we will credit 10% back on your final value fee, all the way up to 100% for our community sellers. If you're donating 100% of your sale, you shouldn't have to pay out of pocket to support a charity, because we are going to make sure 100% of your donation gets to the charity that you selected. But I think aside from the fee credits, there is a big business impact to supporting charity. Knowing and understanding that the newest generation of shoppers, they really pay attention to where their money's going. They really want to make sure that there's an impact being made. And so they will do research. I have a 20-year-old daughter who, when I was 20, I probably didn't even think twice about something like that. But she really thinks about that. And it's really important to her that where she shops is making a difference and an impact. It's also a really great differentiator on the platform. I mean, there's millions of items for sale on the platform, and there's a lot of competition out there. And there's a lot of things that people want to do or try to do to differentiate themselves from the competition. And supporting charity is a way to do that. We do know that there's a tendency for conversion rates and sell-through rates to be higher when a charity is being supported with a listing. So it really helps your listing to stand out in those search results. And it's just a really great way to show consumers that you're a business that cares, you're supporting charity, and really are standing out from the competition in that way.
And if you're a merchant or a seller on eBay and you're giving 100% or 50% or a 10%, that's 10%, 50% or 100% of that, you can deduct it from your taxes.
Yes, absolutely. Our nonprofit partner is PayPal Giving Fund, and they are the ones who are collecting donations from our sellers who are supporting charity with their sales. And PayPal Giving Fund makes sure that our charity sellers receive tax receipts. So when you go to do your taxes, you can deduct those donations.
I have used eBay for charity in the past when I was not on managed payments. How does it work with managed payments now?
It actually still works the same. As a community seller, if you're used to using the program in the past, it should be very seamless and very similar for you to use it now. If you onboarded into managed payments prior to July of 2020, charity just wasn't available for you because we hadn't integrated the program into managed payments. And we started doing that in July. We still are partnering with PayPal Giving Fund to get the donations to the charity. Buyers are paying you. All of that money is coming to you as the seller, because you as a seller are actually the one making the donation. You can either have an automatic payment method on file to pay your donation, so you don't actually have to take that extra step, or you get an invoice that says, hey, you have donations from these sales, pay your donations. Those donations are still being paid through PayPal, and PayPal Giving Fund is collecting them and transferring them to the charity that you're supporting.
Okay, so I see. Now, if I want to give something through eBay for charity, I can set up an automatic payment method, and that can be the same bank account into which my managed payments payouts are now going.
Yeah, I mean, you're still going to pay with your PayPal account for the donation, but the bank account that you're receiving payments from your buyers from can be your form of payment through your PayPal account.
Right, so I'll add that to PayPal. And yep. Then I can just have it taken right out of the same bank account. Oh, yep, that's perfect.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can either seed your PayPal account to have funds in there, or you can just set up your bank account that you're using for managed payments as the payment method through PayPal, and then your donations are paid that way. It'll be really seamless if you set up a donation payment method, so you don't have to worry about the invoices. And if you miss an invoice, it impacting your ability to support a charity on the platform.
We don't want that to happen.
No. Just from my perspective, we have such an amazing and giving community. We want to just make sure that everybody has the ability to support charity through the platform.
Exactly. For those of you who have never used eBay for charity, it's actually part of the listing flow.
Correct. Yeah. So when you're creating a listing on the eBay.com through the Sell Your Item form, there is a Donate to Charity or eBay for Charity box in the listing flow that you just check. And then you're able to go in and use the search functionality to find the charity that you want to support. Globally, we have over 101,000 charities that participate in our program, and the bulk of those are registered and enrolled in the U.S. Chances are the cause type or the charity you want to support is there. You would just search for them, add them to your listing, choose what donation percentage you want to donate to that organization, and then finish completing your listing and submit it to the site. We automatically put the charity ribbon next to your title. We automatically bring in the giving bar that informs your potential customers how much you're donating to charity, the mission statement of the charity you're supporting. So it really just provides that confidence to the buyer that you're supporting this charity. They know exactly how much of that purchase is going to go benefit that charity. It's just a really great way to inform and create awareness about the good that's being done.
We've been talking about sellers who want to donate part of their proceeds from sales to charity, but there's another type of seller, and that's a seller who may be selling on behalf of a charity. That is, they are taking items or they're working for or on behalf of a charity and selling things on eBay. How does that work?
If you're a volunteer for a charity or if you work for a charity, think about organizations like Salvation Army or Goodwill. We work really closely with Salvation Armies and Goodwills. And American Cancer Society also has shops where they accept donated goods. There's a lot of organizations out there that have thrift stores or accept donated goods. And eBay is actually a really great e-commerce platform for nonprofits. We provide this amazing platform and the process to be able to list donated goods. And all of the funds go back to the organizations. Managed payments is a little bit different for a charity if you're selling on the platform. So I would ask that if a charity is hearing this message, that they reach out to us directly so that we can help them get set up. But if you're not in managed payments and you're connected to a charity and you want to make sure you're set up correctly to sell for them as a direct seller, the same fee crediting applies, right? So because we know 100% is going back to that organization, 100% of the final value fee is being credited. With managed payments, a little bit different because of that third-party processing fee going away and everything now being managed on eBay.com. We would want to work directly with the charity partners to help them get set up the right way, but you're still paying less on eBay.com to manage your sales than you were paying to a third-party payment processing system.
There is a page where people can go to learn more about all aspects, and that's at
ebayforcharity.org.
And there's also charity.ebay.com.
Yes, and there's a lot of really great FAQs on charity.ebay.com, but all of that is also pulled into ebayforcharity.org. So it's our one-stop shop for if you're just curious as a community seller on the platform and just want to know how the process works, if you're a charity who's listening to this podcast and wants to find out more information about how do I make sure that my charity is set up in the process and is participating in this program, or how do I start listing inventory on behalf of our organization, ebayforcharity.org just goes over all of that.
There are so many charities.
It's hard to know
which one to pick. Joe, do you have a favorite charity personally?
I am very passionate about the Arthritis Foundation. I have family members who suffer from arthritis and are really impacted by that. So to me, it's really important that I support them. And then also another organization that we really recently got on the platform was the World Health Organization.
Oh, yeah.
And they are amazing, especially with, you know, everything going on with the pandemic. I've added them as a favorite charity on the platform as well. You can search for all sorts of different organizations. If there's a local food bank you want to support, you can search and find your local food bank and add them as a favorite charity. If there's a local like animal shelter that you also support or are passionate about, you can add them as a favorite charity. There's no limitation on how many charities you can favorite. And what favoriting does is it just reminds you, right, in the selling flow, like, hey, Best Friends Animal Society is your favorite charity. Do you want to make a donation to them in your sales?
Yes, I do. I do.
Yeah,
I do.
Exactly. So favoriting is great because it's just a constant reminder and it lets you know that they're there and can be supported. But also I will add that if there's a local organization that you support that you do not see set up on our platform, if they're a public 501c3, they can get registered. On that ebayforcharity.org, there's information on how to get involved and that URL can be sent to the charity. Or if you're a charity listening that wants to get on board, there's step-by-step instructions on how to get enrolled and participate in the program.
So we're going to put both of those URLs in our transcript, as we always do. One is ebayforcharity.org. The other one is charity.ebay.com. And before we go, Joe, there is one thing that we left out, because we've been talking about sellers. But if you're a buyer, you can also give to charity.
You can. You can give to charity through checkout. as a buyer, when you're going through checkout, and we are in the process of actually rolling Givit Checkout into Managed Payments as well. So regardless of what seller you're buying from, if they're in Managed Payments or not, you should be able to see the Givit Checkout feature when you're buying. As you're going to complete your purchase, down at the bottom of the page, you'll see your favorite. If you favorited a charity, you'll always see your favorite charity in the flow.
Of course.
If you don't have a favorite charity selected, we work with partners all throughout the year and feature partners in Givit Checkout. You'll have the opportunity to maybe support one of our partners, and you can add anywhere from $1 all the way up to $25 in the checkout in your cart and make a donation to charity there.
Nothing feels better than giving to charity. I know sometimes it's not easy, but it's the reason why a lot of sellers do on eBay, not just because they can take it off on their taxes. It helps you feel as though you're contributing, and that's always very important.
Everybody has stuff around their house. You can support a charity that way because not everybody has, you know, money just sitting around to donate to an organization. But chances are there's something in your house that you could sell and add a donation to.
All those clothes that you don't fit in anymore because, well, the pandemic has made you larger, right?
You're COVID-15.
Yeah, correct.
Exactly.
Please. Oh, brother. Why be despondent? Get them out of your sight and you won't think about them, and you can donate a part or all of it to charity. You'll be doing yourself and some people who really need the dough a favor. Joe, I want to thank you so much for stopping by. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Griff. This has been great.
Joe Rodriguez is Senior Manager of Operations for eBay for Charity. And again, the links for eBay for Charity, we will put in our transcript. The 2020 holiday online shopping season was truly a record breaker, thanks in part to the impact of the pandemic on buyers' shopping habits. A lot of new buyers came online, including to eBay, to shop for their holiday gifts. And that was a boon for a lot of eBay sellers. But of course, a lot of eBay sellers also rely on postal carriers to get their packages to their buyers. And for many reasons, the holiday shopping season was a real challenge in that respect. And coming back to talk to us about this topic is David DiBartolomeo. Dave's been on the show in the last few months, but Dave actually has a history that kind of informs his being, I want to say, an expert on USPS. Dave sells on eBay under the user ID SelectTech. Dave, it was truly a challenging holiday season.
That was the most unusual holiday season in 8 years of professionally selling on eBay. Yes, yes, it was.
How did you fare? How was your shipping situation?
The shipping situation from Thanksgiving up until really a week ago was a real challenge. A lot of tracking issues, lost package issues, lost in transit. There was a lot of challenges. And with all those challenges was trying to keep customers informed of when deliveries could be expected, what the delay issues are, and how eBay is addressing them, and how, you know, as a seller, I can address them.
Ryan, before we continue, I want to make it clear that we all recognize and acknowledge that the United States Postal Service, USPS, certainly was under enormous pressure, more pressure than they've ever seen in their existence when it came to fulfilling their service obligations. They really had a lot of work to do, and they were working under really trying circumstances. Dave, what experience do you have with the United States Postal Service?
Well, it's a pretty long history. I started in 1993. I started as a clerk. I worked my way to a mail carrier. I worked my way up into supervisor, postmaster, OIC in Atlantic City, and into distribution. So I had a lot of broad experience with different levels of the Postal Service. And, you know, I'd love to bring that experience here today.
Given what we've just experienced, and with your knowledge and experience as a employee of USPS in many different roles, what would be the first thing that a seller should plan for, should this happen again, in their regular shipping business practices that they may not be doing now?
I think it's great to have a relationship with your local post office. What a lot of sellers don't realize is there's data on their end that is exclusive to them, such as tracking information. A lot of the packages that go through and are delivered, they are in fact GPS scanned. It's not something we can see on our end as sellers, but if you do have that relationship with your postal service, you can call up the supervisor or postmaster there, and they can look into GPS mapping. It's done through Google Maps, and they can pinpoint exactly where the delivery location occurred. And that's very useful information when you want to communicate something to the buyer.
And of course, that's an important part of our advice all the time, is to be proactive and to contact your buyer should you notice something delayed in tracking that you're following. And having that information to provide to a buyer is going to make them feel a lot more assured that you're working on their behalf. You've established a relationship with your local post office. What does that mean? Is it just going in and saying hello, or is there something that we should be doing?
It really depends on what kind of business model you have, how many packages, you know, do you go into the post office and have them scanned? Do you have a carrier pickup done? Do you have bulk pickups done? There's some things that you may not be aware of that they can, in fact, help you with, such as carrier pickups. You can even schedule the time of day. So each package that you ship out is tied to the zip code. That zip code gets credit for all the package volume going through. If you're a large shipper, and you're shipping out a high volume, they may want to see it advantageous to send a truck to you every day, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, whatever. Having that relationship with your local postal service really can be an advantage to you. And if it's something that you go to the window, you personally know your clerk, you can drop them off there. You can make sure they're being scanned. You can bring your scan sheet in. They can do that. If you want to do a scan sheet, that's a great way to ship out. Say you have 20, 30 packages at a time. It's time consuming for them to scan each package. It's time consuming for you to wait. You can use that scan sheet and it'll tie in all the packages associated with that scan sheet as an acceptance scan.
What if you take the time and you go in with a huge bag or receptacle of parcels that you're bringing in with a scan sheet and the clerk says, we don't scan online labels?
They are required to scan them. As I said before, the zip code itself gets credit for the packages going through. The credit that goes through, that determines how much funding that postal service gets, what grade level it is, what the postmaster's salary is.
Ooh.
Exactly. So there's a lot of responsibilities in making sure that each and every single package does get scanned and credited.
Yeah. So if you're standing in line and you get to the clerk and the clerk says, we don't scan, what would be your recommendation for a diplomatic, without escalating this, to make sure it happens?
If you don't have that direct relationship and you do catch somebody on a bad day and you go in there and they say what you just said, which is we're not going to scan all of these, that's the point where you can request a supervisor, and maybe they do have a clerk working behind the window that does have the time and can be pulled to go ahead and scan all the packages. But you're in the right to request each and every package to be scanned.
What are some things that sellers need to keep in mind if they're using media mail and what their buyers can expect when it comes to realistic expectations about delivery?
Different forms of delivery, whether it's express mail, priority mail, first class mail, standard mail, media mail, they are segregated. So they have different processes and different routes that they'll travel through. Media mail is a slower process. So the express mail, that has the highest priority, has to get on the plane right away, has to get to its destination in a day. Priority mail, anywhere from 1 to 3 days. First class, typically 2 to 5. And standard mail has no real time value to it. And media mail has no real time value to it. It could take a week. It could take 2 weeks. It's undetermined, but that's what you're paying for with the service.
Give us an idea of how that media mail parcel is handled.
It'll just go through typically a slower ground service. It could use an air service. It'll be contingent on the square footage available to move it. So there's a lot of different factors in how the media mail volume package will transport through. It's a little undetermined. I can't give you a straight answer, but there's different ways to move media mail, and it's at the discretion of the distribution facilities.
This is something that if you're a seller and you're selling media or any item that qualifies for media mail, we should make it clear here. There are some items that don't. there could be significant delays. I noticed as a seller when I was selling my CD collection that the delivery times, how long it took to get to people, were so widely varied. In some cases, it was as fast as first class mail, and in other cases, it was actually weeks and weeks before it got there.
That's correct. And just to backtrack on what you said, proper use of media mail is essential.
Yeah.
The Postal Service does have the right to inspect what it is you're shipping and claiming as media mail. Please be on point with what it is you're shipping and how you're shipping it. But again, yeah, the logistics of moving media mail can depend on really the accessibility, whether it goes by air or whether it goes by ground services. It's really undetermined, and it's just expected to be a slower process. So it's important to communicate that to your buyer that if this is shipping media mail, to be straightforward with the transit times expected.
One of the other questions that's come up over the last few months are packages that were so delayed that they appear lost, and then there's right. no resolution. And sellers who don't quite understand, what can they expect in the way of filing for a claim with USPS, and what are the steps that they would have to take? And this is for a specific issue when the item just seems to have disappeared.
So let me do that in two parts. The first part, I'd like to just address what it means that an item is lost in the mail. What you'll see is an acceptance scan, and you'll see it depart the local post office. You'll see it arrive at the local distribution facility where it gets processed, routed to the correct transportation, and then you will see depart from that distribution center. The next scan does not occur until it arrives at the next distribution center. And that's a lot of the issue that we saw through the holidays was this surge of volume coming through, and it created just trailer after trailer load backed up waiting to be received. Not a day or two or 3 days, but sometimes several weeks.
Yeah.
And that had a lot to do with COVID restrictions. There was a lot of staggering shifts. So you didn't have, say, if you had 100 employees working between this hour and this hour, maybe you only have 50. And, you know, there were staggering shifts, keeping people socially distanced, which is a difficult thing to do at this time. But that's what created a backlog. What you'll see is an acceptance scan. You'll see the departed from the distribution facility, and then you'll see arrived at the next distribution facility. Once it's arrived, it's been accepted there. Then it has to be processed. You'll see it leave that local distribution facility to the local delivery post office, and then you'll see out for delivery, and then the end scanned of delivered. And if there's a gap in that time, then there is a backlog in that location. So you may see it leave in, say, Philadelphia. It departed, but a week or two has gone by and nothing's happened. And you can, in fact, file a claim. You can go on USPS.com and file your claim there. Most claims typically take, say, 3 to 6 days. It may be a little bit longer right now with the surge of claims. And again, with the trailer backlog, there is kind of a wait taking place that I see right now where they want to see if it's going to clear through.
Yeah.
And one of the things you can do, and it's a little bit of a trick that some of us sellers know, is to go onto USPS.com, put in your tracking number. It'll give you that information, but then you request text or email updates. Put in your email address or your cell phone number, and you'll get updates for every step of the way. That does, in fact, trigger a response from the Postal Service to locate the order and get it moving.
Oh.
So it is a good trick. It does work. It serves a purpose, and you will be able to get text or email updates that you could then take and relate to your buyer and say, hey, look, I checked in with the Postal Service. I got a response back. Here's where it is. You should expect it in the next however many days.
Nah,
so it's a good way to go through with that.
That alone was worth this whole interview. That bit of advice.
It's a great process. It does work, and it helps open the communication up between you and the buyers so that there isn't this gap of, hey, what do I do now?
Yeah.
That really is the way to address it.
Damaged in transit is also something that's come up in our question and answer email. Buyer gets an item. It's been damaged in transit. As a seller, I'm just going to immediately take care of it and refund the buyer. But then, depending on the value of the item, I may want to pursue this in order to help mitigate that cost. When something like this happens, what are the steps that the seller has to take? And does it sometimes involve cooperation by the buyer as well?
it's always good to request any physical evidence, whether it's returning the product or maybe a photo uploaded through eBay messaging, so you have something that you can then share with your claim for a damaged item. Some items, it'll be clear that they're damaged and they'll be scanned as received in damaged condition. And it'll be an actual line item on the tracking that when you go to look at tracking, it'll say delivered, arrived damaged. It'll say that. And or it'll be stamped arrived damaged condition.
Is that because it's obvious because the package looks damaged?
Yeah, because the package looks damaged, or frankly, you can hear that it's damaged.
Yes.
And really, taking my experience as a carrier, you don't want to deliver a package that sounds damaged, because then maybe the blame gets placed on you. It's really important for the carrier themselves to cover themselves and have it scanned as received damaged or stamped received damaged. And then you can take that as a seller and file that with your claim. But again, if you don't have that scan or you don't have that stamp on the package that was delivered, you can still communicate with the buyer and get something on their end. And like you said, handle it right away. Whether it's a refund, a replacement, whatever it is you have to do, just handle it right away and you'll be covered on the backside with the Postal Service.
In some cases, I know sellers have been told by USPS that the buyer has to bring the item in to show that it's damaged. And that's always a, how do you get a buyer to actually do that? At least getting them their refund right away. It's easier than to ask them after they've been made whole, hey, for my purposes, could you bring this back to the post office and show them? In cases where that happens, what can we tell a buyer to expect when they take the trouble to help us out as a seller and bring the item into USPS?
So you're asking if they bring it to the Postal Service on their end to help you with your own claim?
Yeah, well, so the items arrive damaged and then the seller goes to file a claim, and sometimes the response back is you have to have your buyer bring the item back in to the post office.
If the buyer were to bring the item back in, they can get documentation that it was received in damaged condition, and then you can go ahead and use that in your claim with the Postal Service.
Should a buyer ever ship an item damaged in transit back to the seller and then let the seller take care of it from there? Is that a bad move?
Well, you have the option with the return process on eBay to either refund the buyer and let them keep it, or have them ship it back so you can inspect it yourself. It's really at your own discretion how you want to handle it.
Yeah.
Me personally, I'll take it on a one-by-one basis. The value of the product, does it make sense to actually have this ship back to me? Maybe I just refund them. I have a photo of the damage. I'll take it from there. Or maybe it's a higher value item and I do want it back. And I do want to take that and use it with my documentation for submitting a claim.
So a buyer could ship the item back and the seller can then proceed with the claim post-transaction and post-refund with the USPS.
That's correct.
Okay, that's good to know. When it comes to actually packing an item, and we could spend hours on that topic.
Yeah.
But given that the post office sees the outside of the package, what are some quick do's and don'ts that a seller should be aware of when it comes to packing an item and making sure that it's handled properly, thus is not damaged in transit and is received by the buyer as quickly as possible?
I've seen it firsthand. What a lot of these packages will transport through are these big metal rolling containers called BMCs. The packages that are outgoing from a post office to the distribution center are put on the BMCs or APCs, which are about half the size. They're loaded up onto the trailers, they're taken to the distribution centers, and they're broken down from there. But what you have to keep in mind is these BMCs can hold hundreds, if not 1,000 packages in them. It depends on, what's really moving through. If you have an item that can be damaged, a fragile item, it is essential to pack it in a way where it's able to have weight placed on it, because there will be weight placed on it. Buyers expecting to get this, maybe it's a gift, maybe it's for themselves, maybe it's a special occasion, they're expecting to receive it in the condition they see it on the listing, and you want to make sure that your buyer receives it in that exact condition that is displayed on the listing. Whatever it is, whether you have to bubble wrap it, get the proper boxes, you can get boxes on eBay, you can get packaging on eBay. the bubble wrap, tissue paper, however it is you determined it needs to be packed, you have to keep in mind that there could be an extreme amount of weight placed on that package as it transports through.
I know that people who sell delicate, fragile items like glassware will actually double box an item to help ensure that it gets there, which could lead to a higher cost for shipping, given the weight and dimensions. But it's sort of a way of self-insuring that the item's not going to be damaged in one of these huge containers where it could be in the bottom, all that weight on top.
All of us have had something come in the mail at some point you're like, oh, wow, it's damaged. Yes. Okay. You know, and it looks like maybe it was even packaged fantastic. I mean, they took all these necessary steps and some of the larger companies, you'll see when you buy something directly through them, they take all these extra precautions and the edge protection, really trying to keep it from having, keep it having space between the outer part of the box and the product itself, but it still gets damaged.
It's an interesting point because we hear sellers who will say, I did the best packing job possible and it still got there damaged. And I know they feel like maybe somehow they did something wrong and it's possible you didn't. It's just that it was in the bottom of a it was at the bottom of a stack that there was just too much weight. There would be no way to protect it. Don't feel bad if it happens to you, but there are steps you can take to help ensure that it doesn't happen, and making sure your packing materials and your packing box are of sufficient strength. And I know that boxes are rated. If you look on the bottom of most cardboard boxes, they have a rating system on them.
Yeah, it'll have a rating system that's really the width of the box itself, how much it can withstand, how much it can carry, whether it's a heavy-duty box, a medium-weight box. Really, the weight of that box itself is going to give you the integrity you need to ship it through. And believe me, this isn't just exclusive to the Postal Service. It's also UPS. It's also FedEx, DHL, any shipping service. You really have to make sure you have good edge protection and that you're packing it so that it arrives the way it should.
Yeah, I learned that the hard way when shipping my CD collection is that one or two of them arrived with the cases cracked. The CD was fine. And I realized that just putting it into a bubble mailer wasn't sufficient. So now I add a piece of cardboard or extra bubble wrap. Extends the package a little bit, but it seems like I've eliminated the occurrence of that. So it was a learning process, as is everything. And of course, we can't learn anything unless we have somebody who's more experienced and expert. And Dave, thanks again for sharing your expertise with us.
Thank you for having me on. I love being an eBayer. I love the seller community, and it's great that we can share ideas together.
And you're becoming a regular podcast correspondent. I hope you don't mind if I lean on you occasionally.
I love it. No problem. I love being here.
Well, we'll talk to you again in a few months for shipping tips and advice from expert David D. Bartolomeo.
Thank you.
Dave D. Bartolomeo sells on eBay under the user ID Select Tech. And I'll put the link in the episode transcript for episode 125.
You got questions?
We got answers.
And exactly how many questions do we have this week?
Well, Brian, we have exactly one, two, three questions.
Only three?
That's correct. Only three, not four and not two. We have, in fact, three. One, two, three questions. Or if you're counting backwards, three, two, one questions. We have the square root of nine questions. That many.
So three questions then.
Yes, three or five minus two questions.
Okay, we get it. I'm not sure if I'm in a Groucho Marx or a Monty Python skit. What's the first question?
I have no idea. Why don't you check your script and read it?
Okay, I will. Our first question.
Question number one.
Question number one was emailed to us at podcast@ebay.com from Dana, who writes, Dear eBay Podcast, my name is Dana Evert, and my eBay ID is traditional_hunter. I really enjoy listening to the weekly podcast. My question is, on my fixed price listings, if I send out a seller-initiated offer, I then cannot update essential parts of my listing, such as the quantity available, until the 48-hour time frame has expired on the SIO. Why can I not update the quantity? I can understand not being able to decrease the quantity, but I need to increase the quantity and it won't allow me to. The error message I receive says the return policy cannot be changed or removed if an auction style listing has a bid or ends within 12 hours or a fixed price listing has a pending best offer. Many thanks, Dana Evert.
Well, thanks, Dana. First off, I realize now in seeing this that the error message may not be absolutely correct. They're just mentioning the return policy. It should say, you know, the listing cannot be changed or removed. I guess return policy is obviously one of them, but she's asking about send quantity. Offers. Yeah.
It sounds like the quantity of items in the listing.
Yeah. She's trying to increase them. I don't know why. Do you know why someone would want to increase the quantity?
The only thing I can think of is if, well, quantity of the listing. I'm thinking maybe she has, let's say, 20 for sale and she gets 20 more in from a shipment. So she wants to say she now has 40 available.
And you can't.
And you can't because there's an offer out there.
Yeah. That's actually a deliberate restriction, Dana, that you can't change the quantity while they're outstanding offers. And that means decreasing or increasing them. That's been that way since the feature was released.
Since this is a seller-initiated offer, it's in her control, though, as well, right? Because, I mean, if she knows, well, I guess if the items came in a day after she sent the SIO and it's got 24 more hours to go, she's just got to wait 24 hours.
Or 48. If
right. But it is deliberate. We don't want people to increase or especially decrease it if there's an outstanding offer.
It's editing that quantity field. So it's not a matter of increasing or decreasing. The flag was set for just editing the field. So it doesn't matter. Either one is not allowed during that time that an offer that you have sent as a seller is out there and it's pending. The suggestion is you should, as a seller, make sure that all the item quantities for any of your listings are updated before sending out the offers. That would be the tactic for this particular situation.
Well, hopefully that answers Dana's question and she takes you up on that suggestion and updates quantity before sending offers.
Yes.
So our next question.
Yeah. Okay.
Please don't.
Two. Brian, question number two.
Was also emailed to us at podcast@ebay.com. And why don't you read this one?
With pleasure. This is from eBay seller Molly, who says, love your podcast. And I need to say this right now. We don't put that in. This is actually what the person emailed.
I'm reading it right now. And you're right. She put it in.
Love your podcast. Well, we love you. I sell on eBay as Ohio Shop Girl 1964 and have all my listings set to immediate payment. What I'd like to know is why eBay does not allow combined shipping with this feature. It would be great for buyers to have the option to buy multiple items and the shipping combine based on the preferences I set up under shipping preferences. I feel that when the buyer has to reach out for an invoice or any manual changes, they usually become discouraged and don't complete the sale. Am I overlooking a feature or is there a better way? Thanks and always looking to learn more, Molly. Well, thank you, Molly. And yes, this is a question I really love. Because there are solutions.
There are.
Yeah.
She's got fixed price listings.
Yeah.
I wish she wasn't having this question.
Right. And I think what Molly may be overlooking is the savviness of buyers now when it comes to the shopping cart. So eBay's had a shopping cart feature now for 10 years almost. And that means that if you have items for sale, you can encourage your buyers in your description to just, if they, you know, if you want to combine a bunch of items into one invoice, just make sure you put them in the cart when you're ready, check out, which is the way every retailer, marketplace, or shopping experience works on the internet. It just took eBay, what, 20 years to catch up? Anyway.
Yeah, and it's that practice that you see often where someone will say, if you spend X, let's say it's $50, then you get free shipping. Or if you spend $25, you get $5 off shipping. It's those kinds of things that you can do within the marketing tab in Seller Hub.
Right, and that's for promotions. There's Promotion Manager, and there's a whole section on setting up shipping discounts that are much more customizable when it comes to a checkout with a shopping cart as opposed to those old combined shipping discounts, which quite frankly are from, I believe, 1999, and they were intended for people who use the auction format exclusively.
Right. But if someone purchased multiple auctions from the same seller,
right,
and then the seller combined the shipping, but with fixed price, you don't have to do that.
And Molly, your instinct about not having to send out an invoice and then, you know, get paid and then make manual changes. You're absolutely spot on with that because that is not the way people shop online. And it could be discouraging and it could turn some people away from buying from you. Make sure you check out the Promotions Manager tab in Seller Hub under marketing. There's a whole PDF that you can link to about how to use shipping discounts.
And we can drop that into the transcript this week, too.
Yeah, we'll put that link in the transcript. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about was that this is a good opportunity to talk about free shipping again. Yes. No, you don't have to have free shipping, but you should at least test it and see if it works for you, because if you eliminate shipping as a concern for checkout or for purchase by having free shipping, then the issue is off the table. So you don't have to worry about combining shipping. You can set prices within your listings that include a rough estimate of shipping. And then if somebody combines all those items in one checkout or uses promotion manager instead of for shipping discounts, you can have multiple item quantity discounts, for example. That's another promotions manager option. Then you don't have to worry about shipping. And here's the part I love. There is the opportunity that in these situations, even with combining them, you're still going to give your buyer a good deal, but you can make extra money. Yes, you
right.
could.
You
there's
could.
Nothing wrong with that.
And then you can give it to the charity of your choice if you like. keep it.
Right. I hope, Molly, that answered your question. We'll put the links in the transcript so you can check out these pages in your Seller Hub. And I believe there's a link to a PDF, and I'll put that in there as well.
And if you haven't checked out Promotions Manager, go to the Marketing tab in Seller Hub and just play around with it a little bit too.
What can you lose?
Don't be afraid to try some things.
Yeah. Okay.
And finally, our last question. That would be question number...
Brian?
Yes, I know. Question number 3.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Our third question.
Question number 3.
Now stop that.
Okay.
Was emailed again to podcast@ebay.com and starts out with, "Hi guys, loving the podcast. Have been listening since episode 73. Thank you so much for listening. We have a small but perfectly formed business, and some of the new tools introduced in the last year or two have been really game-changing and allowed us to grow faster. Our question relates to offers to buyers, and then parenthetically, new feature to automatically send offers when sending a single offer is great, and although we've only used it for a couple of weeks, we've definitely had sales when using it. However, we are interested in viewing the items that we have automatic offers for. The help pages suggest that there is an area to go where you can view the item set and make changes to the auto offer. However, we followed the link and instructions and it's not there. Please, could you look to see where it is? We're in the UK, and although the podcast talks a lot around .com, your content is ever interesting and very valuable. In our opinion, all eBayers should be listening.
Yes.
Many thanks and keep up the great work. Faye and Simon from FNS Resellers. One thing I'll say really quick to Faye and Simon is, so thanks, Faye and Simon. And we're glad you're enjoying our little podcast.
Little?
Tell as many of your eBay seller friends there in the UK as you can.
Anyway, I know the answer to this, by the way.
You better not say a number. What is it then?
No, it's not. Faye and Simon, the help pages may need to be updated because it's not an actual page that you have to visit. It's a drop-down menu on a page, and it's really easy to find. So go to the active listings page in Seller Hub. That's your page that's marked as active listings on the tab. Then at the top of the active listings page, look for the search boxes, specifically the one that is labeled all statuses. Now you click the down arrow inside the all statuses box and select the menu option for with offers sending automatically. And if you select that, and you can set the other parameters of the search if you want as well, this will filter all of the active listings to only those that have offers sent out automatically. And from there, you can edit and make changes and do whatever you like. That's it.
Wow, that was easy.
Yes, it was. And it was fun because I didn't have to research it.
One thing, as I'm looking at what you shared, maybe we can pop those images into the transcript as well.
Yeah, we can put the images in the transcript. But like I said, that would be fun too. I think putting the images in the transcript would be a lot of fun. Let's do that.
If you want to join in the fun here on eBay for Business, all you have to do is to call us on 888-723-4630.
Yeah, that number is waiting for your call, 888-723-4630. Operators are standing by. Call that hotline at any time, any day of the week. Leave a question or a comment. And if it's appropriate and we think other sellers will find it interesting, we just might put it on the air.
And if you're not a call on the phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And now the last section of every show, your daily podcast to-do list.
Always, not just this week, but always, every week. In fact, every day, Check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news at www.ebay.com/seller news.
Couldn't be easier. And now, tip number two.
Oh, here we go again.
Yeah, just curious, what brand of thermal printer did you buy?
Well, I did, but I didn't.
Oh, well, I'm asking our listener, not you.
Okay.
I'm partial to the Zebra GX420RX. It's an affordable workhorse, but there are other options as well.
Buy a thermal printer. Nag, 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 nag. So actually, I did buy a thermal printer. I just bought one that was too small.
Yeah, but I wasn't asking you. I'm glad you bought one. I was asking our listener.
Let's ask this.
Right.
If you have purchased a thermal printer for printing postage labels at Griff's weekly insistence.
That's me.
Tell us about it. What brand did you buy? Was it easy to set up? Are you happy with it? And I'll say, even if you didn't buy it with Griff's nagging, like if you have one that you really like, let us know.
Yeah. I'm on a one-man mission. I want every seller to get a thermal printer for their labels. It will change your life. And once you have one, or if you want to submit your review, call us or email us with your review at 888-723-4630 or podcast@ebay.com.
Please buy one, somebody, and get Griff off this obsession.
Never.
And finally.
Number three, Brian. Number three.
And finally.
Yes.
Number three.
Yes.
Check out the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to see the links we referenced during the episode.
On our next episode, we'll explore the ins and outs of thermal printers. No, on our next episode, we'll start the month of February, the theme of which, by the way, and I just got this hot tip, it's going to be called Review Month. So that's the theme, and we'll start the month of February as we review last year's return data to implement tactics for mitigating the cost of returns. Finally, it'll be on the segment.
We'd again like to thank our guest this week, eBay Senior Manager of Operations for eBay Charity, Joe Rodriguez, and eBay seller and shipping expert, Dave DiBartolomeo.
That was two guests we had this week. Two, one, two. The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411. 2, 3, 4, 5.